Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into ampleharvest.org. Now, you might know them already. They're the nonprofit connecting gardeners who have, you know, extra vegetables with local food pantries.
Right.
But we're focusing on something really specific. Their push to tackle food insecurity and malnutrition within Native American communities, often called Indian Country.
Yeah, and we've looked at a bunch of sources, articles, some research, Ample Harvest's own info to really get a handle on the unique challenges there. But also, importantly, the strengths that are already in place. Things like traditional gardening, that strong sense of community sharing, it's already part of the culture.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack how Ample Harvest took its successful model, but didn't just like copy-paste it. How did they really adapt it?
Yeah.
Make it fit the realities on the ground in tribal communities? And, you know, what are they hoping to achieve?
Makes sense.
So let's start with the basics. Remind us, what's the core idea behind ampleharvest.org?
Okay, so at its heart, it's pretty simple but really effective. Think of it like a search engine. It's basically a national online list where home gardeners, community gardeners, if they have too many tomatoes or zucchini or whatever.
Happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. They can quickly find a food pantry nearby that actually wants fresh produce donations.
Okay, so the gardener themselves, they do the picking and dropping off. It's not like a food bank truck showing up.
That's a really key point. It's not what you'd call traditional food recovery, you know, where volunteers go out collecting leftovers from farms or stores. And it's not really peer-to-peer sharing either, like just giving to your neighbor.
Sure.
The focus is specifically getting healthy food to hungry families through those established pantries.
Oh.
And importantly, the organization provides legal protection for the gardeners donating through those registered pantries. It's also not gleaning, which is usually about farms, right? Post-harvest stuff.
Right. Big fields.
Yeah. This is mostly home and community gardens. Although they did adapt a bit during COVID for smaller family farms that suddenly couldn't sell their stuff. But the core is still home gardens.
That sounds incredibly efficient then, if the gardener does the work.
It really is. Because the gardeners are already growing it, they harvest it, they take it there themselves. You basically eliminate the two biggest costs in traditional food aid.
Which are?
Buying the food in the first place, and then all the logistics, the trucks, the storage, moving it around.
Right, right.
So this creates this decentralized system. It works with the big food banks they have, Feeding America's support, but it bypasses a lot of that complex infrastructure for this specific type of donation. Fresh produce.
And I imagine the food is super fresh then, if it's going straight from the garden.
Oh, incredibly fresh. Often it's picked in the morning and at the pantry by the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, truly garden fresh. No need for complicated refrigeration chains or long-term storage.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And this efficiency means a really high return on investment. Plus, it kind of grazes virally. Gardeners find out. They tell their friends.
Word of mouth.
Exactly. By 2022, they had something like over 8,000 pantries registered across 4,200 communities, all 50 states.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty wide reach for what sounds like a lean model.
Yeah.
All right. Let's pivot then, specifically to Indian Country. Why the focus here? What's the need?
Yeah, the sources we looked at really spell it out. I mean, access to healthy food is a problem nationwide, contributes to diet-related diseases. We know that. But these issues are just way worse in many tribal communities, dramatically so.
How much worse are we talking?
Estimates suggest about 2/3 of reservations deal with food insecurity. That means Native American families are something like 4 times more likely to be hungry or malnourished than the rest of the country.
4 times. That's huge.
It's staggering. And you mentioned the government food programs earlier. Often the commodities provided, they're more processed, right? Not a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, canned goods, staples, that sort of thing.
Exactly. There's an example in the sources, Todd County on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. It's kind of held up as typical. They've got like a 26.4% of food insecurity rate. And 71% of the people there are eligible for SNAP benefits. So the need for fresh, healthy options is just, it's critical.
Okay, so a clear and urgent need.
Mm-hmm.
But the sources also mentioned a really interesting flip side, an existing strength in these communities.
Absolutely. And this is key to why the Ample Harvest model could potentially work so well here. Gardening isn't just something people do. It's often deeply culturally ingrained.
Right.
Nationally, you've got, what, 62 million gardeners? The potential surplus is massive, could feed millions. But check this out. The 2019 National Gardening Survey showed Native Americans actually garden more per capita than most other ethnic groups.
Really?
Yeah. Like 42% bought vegetable plants, 68% bought vegetable seeds. Those numbers are really high. It shows huge engagement with growing food.
So the interest, the skills, the desire to grow food, it's already there.
It's definitely there. And often it's tied into making traditional indigenous foods available again. Plus, that core value of sharing food, that's shared across pretty much all tribal nations.
And a rural environment helps too, I suppose.
For sure. More space, connection to the land. So, you know, on paper, it seems like a perfect fit.
Yeah.
But as the sources stress, you couldn't just drop the standard Ample Harvest website and expect it to work seamlessly. There were specific local realities they had to understand and adapt to.
Okay, let's get into that adaptation piece.
Mm.
The sources really highlighted this multi-year process where Ample Harvest basically just listened first.
Yeah.
What did that look like?
Yeah, that listening phase seems absolutely critical. It wasn't quick. It involved talking extensively with tribal elders, with food sovereignty experts, with government folks from the USDA, Department of Interior.
It's really consulting widely?
Widely and deeply. Attending conferences, doing research. The emphasis was on not coming in with assumptions, but really trying to grasp the specific problems from the community's perspective.
And through all that listening, what kind of unique challenges popped up? Things they maybe didn't expect?
Well, several practical things. Like internet access, it can be really limited or spotty in some areas. Same for cell service.
Which, for an online platform, sounds like a pretty big hurdle, maybe even a deal breaker.
You'd think so, right? But it turns out their system, because it was originally designed way back in 2009 when internet wasn't everywhere, it already had some flexibility built in. Pantries, for instance, they only really need internet access for that first sign up online. After that, not so much.
And the gardeners looking for a pantry?
They do need access to search, yeah. But they can use it from anywhere, a phone if they have service, a computer at home, the library, you know, any access point. The system was kind of built anticipating varied access levels.
Okay, that's clever. Built-in resilience.
Yeah.
What about actually finding the pantries? If you don't have standard street addresses or, you know, reliable GPS in some rural areas.
Yeah, that was a big one. Standard maps rely on addresses. So they partnered with a technology called What3Words.
What3Words? How does that work?
It's pretty cool, actually. It divides the entire world into 10-foot squares. And each square gets a unique three-word address, like table.chair.spoon or whatever it might be for that exact spot.
So incredibly precise.
Super precise. Even if there's no street name or number, it lets a pantry pinpoint their exact location, maybe even a specific entrance or a mobile pantry spot. They also added ways for pantries to upload photos or use Google Street View if it's available there.
That What3Words sounds like a really smart fix for that specific problem.
Yeah.
Any other unexpected roadblocks?
Get this. Missing zip codes.
Wait, really? There are places without zip codes?
Apparently so. Populated areas in the U.S. that just don't have one assigned, so they had to tweak the search for Indian country. Now, a gardener can just use their own zip code, or maybe one from a nearby town, and the search will still find pantries in those zip codeless areas if they're registered nearby.
Huh. A detail you'd absolutely miss unless you were right there dealing with it.
Totally. And then there was the nature of the food distribution points themselves. Are they always, like, official nonprofit food pantries?
Good question.
Yeah.
Maybe not always.
Right. The sources said sometimes while the goal is free food distribution, the actual spot might be part of, say, a local store or maybe a gas station, somewhere central in the community. So the program for Indian country is being set up to actually accept those kinds of locations, as long as they're basically acting like a nonprofit food drop-off point.
So bending the rules a bit to fit the reality makes sense. And making the materials culturally relevant, that must be huge for getting buy-in.
Oh, absolutely crucial. They're working directly with tribal leaders on the imagery, the language used in outreach stuff, trying to make sure it resonates and feels respectful while still keeping the core website functions consistent so it's easy to use.
Okay, so years of listening, identifying these unique hurdles, developing specific fixes. What's the game plan now? How do they actually roll this out?
It's basically a two-part plan happening at the same time. Part one, get more food pantries in Indian country signed up and visible on the ampleharvest.org site. Part two, a big public awareness campaign aimed right at Native American gardeners, letting them know, hey, this exists, here's how you can use it.
And they can't do that alone, surely. Who are they teaming up with?
No, definitely not. They're really emphasizing reliance on partnerships. Guidance from tribal leaders is key. Local food programs on the ground, Native Americans across the country. Specific partners mentioned include like regional Feeding America food banks, various tribal health and hunger organizations, plus ongoing work with the USDA and the Department of Interior.
Okay, so a collaborative effort. How are they actually planning to spread the word to reach both the pantries and the gardeners?
It's a pretty broad strategy, creating materials specifically for outlets that people in tribal communities actually use, tribal newspapers, maybe local radio, TV scripts, even things like the Farmer's Almanac.
Meeting people where they are.
Exactly. And tailoring messages for potential influencers or, you know, trusted voices within the community. They mentioned people like Chief Henry Redcloud, the chef Sean Sherman, musician Bill Miller.
Using recognized names.
Right. Getting photos of actual Native American gardeners for the materials. Working with big garden retailers, Bonnie Plants, Home Depot, Lowe's. Partnering with groups like the National Gardening Association, Master Gardeners, the BIA.
Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Right. They're even using a big chunk of their Google ad grant, like $20,000 a month, for ads targeted specifically to reservation communities.
Wow.
Plus, finding local garden clubs, they hired an indigenous intern, seeking chances to speak directly at community events, meet with elders, really covering a lot of bases.
That sounds incredibly thorough.
Yeah.
A really intentional push through trusted channels. Is it happening everywhere at once, or is there a sequence?
There's a sequence. It's a phased rollout geographically. They're planning to start with reservations in the southern part of the U.S., Pine Ridge included, and then kind of work their way north, focusing first on the federally recognized tribes.
Okay, let's talk potential impact. The sources mentioned this Harvard Business School analysis that really puts the long-term effect into perspective.
Yeah, that analysis is pretty eye-opening. It shows how this model creates this, like, sustainable compounding return. It tracked what happens with just a single one-time $100 donation to ampleharvest.org. Over 20 years.
Okay.
That first $100 leads to gardeners donating produce, and the amount grows each year as more people join. Year one, maybe 206 pounds. Year two, 278 pounds. But cumulatively, by year 20, that initial $100 results in something like 107,000 pounds of donated fresh produce.
Whoa! Over 100,000 pounds.
From $100.
Yeah, valued at nearly $150,000 in produce. It's because the donation isn't buying food that gets eaten once, it's funding the connection.
The platform, the network.
Exactly. That connection keeps enabling donations year after year, and those gardeners tell others.
Sure.
It creates this viral loop of giving. It's a totally different way of thinking about impact compared to traditional food aid,
yeah,
where the money buys food, it gets distributed, and then it's gone. That's a powerful difference. So, okay, obviously it helps with hunger. And food waste, clearly. What other ripple effects does this model have?
Well, several big ones. By boosting access to fresh, local food, it directly tackles malnutrition and those diet-related health issues we talked about being so prevalent.
Yeah, getting healthier food onto plates.
Yep. And cutting down food waste isn't just about hunger. It has environmental benefits, too. Less strain on landfills, you know, the whole waste stream.
Yeah.
Indirectly helps with climate impacts. And it builds community, right? Connecting gardeners to local resources, connecting neighbors.
Fostering those connections.
Yeah. So it hits multiple issues at once.
So what's the ultimate goal here? What's the end game for ampleharvest.org in Indian Country?
The vision really is that eventually every gardener and every food pantry in Indian Country knows this opportunity exists and can easily tap into it. Now, they're clear, and the sources are clear, this won't solve hunger all by itself. You still need packaged foods, especially in winter. Gardening isn't year-round everywhere.
Sure, it's one piece of the puzzle.
Exactly. But the goal is to maximize the use of all that amazing, fresh, local food that's already being grown that gardeners want to share. It's about making the absolute most of an existing community strength to help feed families for as long as that need is there.
You know, this whole deep dive into the Indian Country program, it really underlines something important about adapting programs, mm-hmm, doesn't it? It's not just about copying what works somewhere else.
Not even close. I think it really shows how vital it is to actually, truly listen first, to respect the specific local context, the unique realities, and then build solutions, technical ones like the what three words, relational ones like the partnerships that are tailored to fit and crucially leverage the strengths already present, like those deep traditions of gardening and sharing.
It definitely leaves you thinking. When we look at complex problems, you know, in any diverse community,
mm-hmm,
how much does finding a real solution depend on starting not with our own ideas, but just with the humility to listen, to really understand the reality that's already there?
That's a huge question, isn't it? And this example strongly suggests that, yeah, maybe understanding and integrating with what already is, maybe that's the most critical first step toward solutions that actually work and last.